I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hour two of the program is being brought to you by Mega Pros. Repair, remodel, renovate. MegaPros.com. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We've been talking about all sorts of things today. We talked about the NHL playoffs a little bit, NBA, White Sox, and Cubs. And one of the bigger stories going on in Chicago today happened last night, and one of the people that was involved in it is here in studio with me. Doug Glanville is an excellent analyst for NBC Sports Chicago. He's not joining me on the Alphamonte Ford Hotline, but if he were, I would say that there are 500 new and used cars that you can go check out at Alphamonte Ford, and you should do that. Doug has been nice enough to stay with his commitment to be on the show today. Right. that we had initially done, like we were just going to have a nice baseball conversation. Mostly that's what it's going to be. But Doug is here in studio with me. Doug, I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure to be here. I'm excited to talk about the Cubs run right now and a little distractions and things swirling around, but at the same time, nothing taken away from Chris Bryant last night and just how they're getting the ship righted right now.
You're someone who has been at the Venn diagram, at the nexus of sports and activism. You talk about this. You've taught a class on this at Yale. I don't want to belabor the point, and I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but what are your thoughts about what happened last night? And if you could you just share with the audience like how you even found out what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I recognize, even just what we talked about in class, is about the idea of chasing heat over chasing light, sort of the idea of where it's hot and where it's flame, you go towards it, but you're not always using that to enlighten people and to share. And I think part of that is just being patient with a process of really understanding what happens, right, in any scenario. And in my case, that process is still happening. I know the Cubs and NBC Sports has expressed their support about investigating to understand what exactly went down and why. And that information is so critical on how one reacts. And I'm always concerned about jumping the gun and be like, oh, it's all this thing. And then I found out, oh, wait a minute, it was actually this. And, so for me last night, I just did my job. I'm on air. I'm just, doing my hit, unaware of anything around me and focusing on the monitor and the game. And I know when I went back to studio after the game, like I typically do in the seventh inning, I just kind of look at my Twitter feed and like normal. And then I start seeing all this imagery and debate back and forth over it. And I think that's when I started to put some things together. So, at that point, I started to hear from, support from people from the organization and the Cubs just to sort of get on the same page. And I agreed with them just saying, look, we have to investigate and understand exactly the extent of things before, we jump to conclusions. I know it's natural now to like get the story and go crazy. And then all of a sudden, you backpedal and it's almost like a correction in the back of the newspaper. By the time you come back, we're more interested in the hypothetical and the speculative and the should have and could have and would have instead of actually, waiting a little bit and understanding the context. So, that's kind of, how I've always approached things. And, we have a law in Connecticut because of 18 months of work because of an experience I had with a police officer in my driveway that ended up being something that took place over 18 months of collaboration. And I think it was considerably more sustainable because we were patient with it.
And so you expect that when the Cubs are fully done with their investigation, they'll bring the findings to you and then you could process all of this.
Right, exactly. I expect there'll be, conversations and investigations and some sort of conclusive decision as to like, okay, this is what happens. This is what we know. And then I would do, where my strength is. And that is, I love writing long form. I love engaging on these topics. I don't shy away from any of these difficult subjects. I grew up in a town in Teaneck, New Jersey, that was the first community to voluntarily desegregate 1960s. And their school system used a pilot program in sixth grade to bring people together of different walks of life. So I watch patience in action of how people can bridge a lot of differences, even with the most frictional and tension-filled disagreement. So I remain optimistic, but I also want to be patient with the process.
I think that's a really good way to speak about it. I mean, you don't want this to happen to anybody, but if something like this is going to happen, I can't imagine someone handling it better than you could.
No, I appreciate that. And you know, as I mentioned, you mentioned earlier, I taught now two classes because I've been so interested in the intersection of sport and society. And I taught a class at my alma mater, University of Pennsylvania, and I taught at Yale this semester, and the students were incredible. I think what I was able to learn from them as a teacher was to gain the value of getting information and the value of kind of seeing through the fire. And I think that this is one of those examples.
Okay, so I have a list of baseball things that I want to talk to you about. Doug Glanville is here with me in studio. Chris Bryant, we've had a long discussion over the last few weeks on this show, and I have Joe Maddon on once a week. And Joe was talking about some of the changes that he's made in Chris Bryant's batting stance, how he wants guys to be their most comfortable. Go back to what it is that you do well and have done well instead of trying to add stuff. How hard is that of a message is that for a player to receive and then process and then put into action?
You know, it's tough, and it's a great question because you're so concerned about real time or looking ahead in baseball. Sometimes you go, oh, my goodness, like, oh, here, I'm facing this guy. I have to do this. Oh, next week, this guy's coming in town. You know, you're looking forward and assuming it's a progressive build on your skills. But there's often times you actually have to go backwards. You have to go back in time, review the patterns, review how you were set up, review all these things that happened before. Because one thing about baseball players, especially position players, you're great at pattern recognition. You face the same pitcher. You know, I faced Greg Maddux like whatever 30 times, and you know, you start to learn this little cat and mouse game. So you have to be able to go back and sometimes acknowledge that you have to throw some things away you're doing and reset on something that you're doing well in the past.
Well, it looks like he's done that a little bit. In your analysis of Chris Bryant, what's going on with him?
Yeah, I mean, the signs to me, first of all, the hard hit contact is a clear sign of how he's picking up on some things and really making adjustments. When he's going the other way, certainly right center-ish, that power alley, that's a positive sign. And then the fact that he works counts. He's able to work deep in the count. I remember when I first met Chris Bryant, I had a conversation with him, and we were talking about, I said, well, where did you get this sort of plate discipline? And he said, yeah, like ever since I was a kid, even in Little League, my dad would get on me and say, you know, why aren't you swinging up there? And he's like, those were balls. You know, he's not a guy that's going to expand the zone unless it's a bad sign. He's going to really work within his zone. He has a great sense of the strike zone. And when he's going well, he's not necessarily, you know, hitting 400 with 15 home runs in a week. But what he is doing is, you know, peppering the ball, hard hit contact, getting his walks, good base runner, and quietly destroying his opponent. And so far, this past probably 2 weeks, he's been on that trajectory.
I looked at his last 7 days yesterday because Joe had been on the show a week ago, and he had said, you know, he's close. Like, KB's close to having that breakthrough. And so you look at the numbers, and obviously, I think he was slugging 720 over the last seven games. But the number that stuck out to me was the seven walks. And usually, if a guy is seeing the ball well, that's when they take that next step of, okay, now I know I'm laying off of pitches that I don't want to swing at, and now I can go full force at the ones that are in my hot zone.
Right, and there's a fine line between taking your walks because you're tentative and not sure and taking them because you're zoned up. And right now you're seeing Chris Bryant zoned up. Now, the advantage of a Chris Bryant when he's not playing as well, like early on, he still had a 350 on base percentage. You know, he's getting on base. And he, you know, we have to get sort of familiarized with the player that he is. He's more of a Magic Johnson, pass the ball, I'm not necessarily shooting threes, you know, as opposed to a Jordan, I'm just a scoring machine and everybody clear the lane because I'm about to go one-on-one. You know, he has much more of a team, hybrid personality where he's a good base runner and he moves runners. And he'll take his hits when he needs it. He'll take his walks. He doesn't necessarily expand the zone in an area he's not comfortable. So you're seeing the best of Chris Bryant right now. And him makes that he makes that lineup so much longer. And that was what was missing last season.
Doug Glanville joining me here in studio. You can see Doug's work on NBC Sports Chicago. Does a great job, whether he's at the desk or out there on the field during the broadcast. I love Javier Baez. He's my favorite player to watch in baseball. The evolution of him as a hitter. I mean, he's incredible tagger, incredible defensively, great base runner. But his evolution as a hitter, what are you seeing? What's he doing well over the last 150 games that he wasn't doing as well before then?
Well, there's a couple of standout things. For one, he's not chasing as much as he used to. And I'm talking about chasing bad pitches consistently in the dirt. So he has this magic swing one moment, and then all of a sudden he's chasing a ball 4 feet outside. Now, he's still going to be a chase guy because he actually has a giant amount of plate coverage. He's a little bit more in the Vladimir Guerrero family of hitting, where you're just like hacking and you know, making good contact. I mean, he hit a ball that bounced the other and got a hit off of it, so that tells that story. But on top of that, the real positive sign is his power the other way, his ability to drive the ball with authority. He's not just sort of floating it over there. He is leaning back, letting the ball get deep, and driving at the opposite field for home runs. I mean, he has more home runs the opposite field than he has in any other position of the field right now. And that is an incredibly positive sign because it's not like he's flailing. Like Chris Bryant, for example, doesn't generally drive the ball straight away to right field. He gets his singles. He'll get a double here and there. But that's not where his power game. Javi Baez is driving the ball everywhere. And what that does is, first of all, the outfielders have to play deeper, right? And now they also have to spread out line to line. So you're fanning out the outfield, and you're just creating more green space. And that's why Javi Baez's average is going up with it. Because as a defender, if I'm a right fielder, I have to respect that he can hit the ball over my head. So I can't, like, play in shallow and cut off the singles. I have to be in near, you know, the warning track, and I have to worry about the gaps. And that's why I think for him, he's taken such a level because his power game is spread out, and it's going to contribute to his batting average. And as a result, he's an extremely dangerous hitter right now.
Do you think that as a defender, would that play a role in why Javi is able to stretch so many singles into doubles too? Because guys are playing so far back that he can get an extra couple steps around first base?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And we saw it the other day. I mean, he was out at second, but, you know, they have to play deep and respect that. Now they're playing in a way that if they don't get the ball at the right angle and cut it off aggressively, if they're just a little lackadaisical, he's on second base. And even if the ball beats him, he has his magic, you know, evasive tag slide. So there's so many weapons, and you have to give him a lot of credit because he's kind of created more weapons because of the ability to spray the ball around with authority. And this is no accident. He's up there intentionally going to right field. This isn't like, oh, I'm late. He's actually letting the ball travel. And when you let the ball travel, and have that one tells me you have a lot of confidence in your hands, which is a little bit of the issue when you get into slumps. You start jumping, and he's like, no, I'm going to let the ball get deep. No big deal. You can't beat me. And what does that do? It helps you stay on the slow stuff a little bit longer, and it helps you lay off the slow stuff a little bit longer. So everything trends with Baez that he's really rounding out the completeness of his game, and now he just has to be consistent.
One of the things that I see a lot talking to Cubs fans on this show is their concern over Yu Darvish. I think that his stuff is still like super electric. Like he's got so many pitches that he can use. Why isn't he harnessing it into more complete starts?
I mean, look, Darvish's stuff is there. And there's no question that when you return from that kind of injury, there's going to be this tentative adjustment period. I mean, that's normal because whether you have the velocity is not as sort of tantamount to the fact that he is concerned about injury again, right? Oh, can I release it? You know, so you kind of go through that period. Now you see, okay, he's got the stuff is moving, but the issue now is just getting that confidence to just execute it and get through those big innings. We saw last year, what was it, like the fifth inning? It was like, okay, he's cruising along, and then boom, everything, the wheels come off. And so he has to get past that, get deeper, and be consistent with it, because there's no question the velocity's there, the location, but there's always that bad pitch or that bad inning. And then once things start unraveling, he's not really able to bring it back as quickly. So some of that just speaks to confidence and just getting into that rhythm.
What did you think of Tim Anderson embracing the fun and the whole kerfuffle that happened between him and Kansas City?
Right. No, I mean, he's showing out right now, and he's having fun. And I think that, you know, the whole bat flips and the spiking the bat like it's a football in the end zone. He's playing for the Bears. I think he's just trying to shake it up. And he's also a player sort of like Baez, like coming into his own. You're seeing these flashes and it's starting to gel a little bit more consistently. He can run. He's got power. I mean, so they're very similar, really exciting ball players, and the upside is limitless. So, you know, it's good for the White Sox because they're playing, you know, decently. You know, they've gotten off to a much better start, and there's some positive signs. You just got to get that rotation a little tighter. But you have some talent all through that lineup, and Tim Anderson definitely is a cornerstone player.
When you were talking about Bryant and his strike zone, it made me think a little bit about Moncada, where Moncada was having that problem last year. I talked with Ricky Renteria about it yesterday, where he's looking at two strike pitches, and he's like, that's a ball. Like, I'm not swinging at it. And he kept getting called out on a lot of those pitches. And Ricky said, look, it's the difference between a half a ball. Like, you have to, as a hitter, figure out how far are you going to go outside of the zone. How long does that take for a player?
It may not ever happen. I mean, the truth be told. I mean, I wasn't known for a great plate discipline, but what I started to understand is that there's two things to consider. There's the zone, the strike zone, the actual physical measured umpire called zone, which is specific to each umpire. And then there's your zone. And it's a real clear distinction. I was a high ball hitter, for example. So it made sense for me to expand the zone up in the zone. It made sense for me to chase up in the zone because I'm chasing in a place I can handle. My weakness would be when I'm chasing balls down in the zone and I can't handle that and I'm hitting myself into outs. So you don't have to worry about a lot of those things until you're at two strikes. Like, why am I going to chase a low pitch until I absolutely have to? And there's some super talented players that have the match and the overlay between the strike zone and their zone, like a Chris Bryant. And it may work out that his swing path works that way, where he's not a high ball hitter necessarily, but the zone lines up. And so that's a huge advantage. So a guy like Moncada is like, well, look, this isn't, like Chris Bryant said, this wasn't a strike, so I shouldn't be swinging. Well, learning how to expand that just enough, especially with two strikes, is key. But with two strikes, all bets are a little bit off. You have to kind of figure out how to expand and know exactly your environment, especially when you have runners in scoring position. And that's something young players are figuring out, and the great ones figure it out a lot sooner.
You're a pretty cerebral guy, and it's been that way for a long time. But have you changed at all the way that you view the game between the time that you were a player and now as an analyst?
Well, no doubt. I mean, I'm constantly learning. I feel like I'm a student all over again, just figuring out all the new things, let alone the fact that we're just in a different era. You know, the shifting defenses, the use of analytics, the way bullpens are executed. I mean, there is a different set of priorities. You know, when you have these escalating strikeouts but escalating home runs, you have a different culture. And, you know, now Bill James, you know, I always read his year in review, and he talked about how this last year was the first year in quite some time that the top 10 teams in strikeouts actually had a combined losing record. So this is the first time we're starting to see that maybe strikeouts are starting to work against us as a league and as a team that can be successful. You know, it's worth it. Right? You can have Aaron Judge. That's cool. He hits home runs. But there's a reason why you keep players like that, because they're still very good players and they still do a lot of damage. And you'll take the strikeouts. That strikeout thing is not as advantageous as it's been over the last, say, 20 years. And so we're now wondering about, like, you know, you mentioned Tim Anderson and guys, you know, they're going to strike out more and not walk as much, you know, where that rubber meets the road.
Take the Cubs and the White Sox out of it. Who's your favorite player to watch in the game and why?
Oof, well, there's a big landscape out there. But I mean, look, I can start with Javi Baez. He's certainly.
Take him out. No, yeah, Cubs, no White Cubs. Sox. Take him out.
Man, that's a big league out there. I mean. Whew. I mean, you got to watch like Christian Yelich or someone who just, you know, does all the things. I mean, I prefer players that can do it all. You know, they run, they hit, they play defense, they hit for power, hit for average. I mean, he's a lot of fun to ride because he does it so quietly. You know, a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, for example, like the quiet riot, you know, they do it so quietly. But, you know, I'm a fan again, I would say, because there's so many exciting teams out there. And even though the strikeouts is different from my era, we were always choking up like Rizzo and all that. I recognize this incredible athleticism going on and this high velocity play and guys hitting the ball 440 and longer, which is really incredible. So I have to get back to you on, but there's probably a laundry list if I really digest so many exciting players, because there are a lot of young players that are coming up right now and expecting and producing as impact players.
What's it like to do a show with Ozzie Guillen?
Oh, I mean, you know, you have to be ready for anything.
Yes.
So, And you have to be ready for anything in two languages. So that's one thing. But Ozzy and I, we go way back, and you know, he's going to say what he thinks, and for better or for worse. So I find him refreshing, and I know he can get into trouble from time to time, but you know, he loves the game and he knows the game. And when you're around someone who has that passion for it, it's easy to get caught up in a way that reminds you why you love the game in the first place.
Doug, thank you so much for being here, coming in studio. Really appreciate everything you had to say and the fantastic baseball analysis. I love when you and JD and Lynn talk baseball, and Lynn's so good at getting out of the way and letting you and JD talk about the game. It's a very valuable thing that you guys do when you're doing that pure in-game analysis. I really like it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to doing more of it. And they, you know, there's just an A-plus team. They're so good, and they're so entertaining. That's where I'm able to step back. I listen to the broadcast, you know, in between takes, and, you know, it's just, it's must listen. You know, they're just so good. And once again, they've helped me kind of revitalize my fandom. You know, it's really cool.
That's Doug Glanville. You can watch him on NBC Sports Chicago. You got books and stuff. Where can people get your book?
Oh, yeah. The Game From Where I Stand. It's a few years old now, but it's still around. The usual suspects, right? Amazon. You could even email me if you want. Tweet me or whatever it is. Send me a direct message. But it's still out there. I'm glad it's still going.
We need to take a time out. This was fantastic. Back after this on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.